Good morning again. In this lesson, we're going to focus on the later years of life, in particular the challenges faced by people who are middle-aged and older. In Luke chapter 1, the angel Gabriel told Zacharias that he and his wife would have a child. And Zacharias was understandably skeptical, and he said, "How shall I know this? For I am an old man, and my wife is advanced in years." And I thought, that's a smart man, isn't it? He says, "I'm an old man, but what's his wife? Advanced in years." I like the way of saying that. Kind of makes it sound like a special achievement. She's not old, she's advanced. It sounds pretty desirable. I was disappointed to find out that this was not a clever invention by Zacharias describing the age of his wife. This was a figure of speech used among the Jews for both men and women. But even so, even though it doesn't mean what I thought it meant, getting old is desirable, isn't it? It's not exactly a personal achievement, but it's a special blessing from God, because not everybody gets old, do they? I heard one gray-haired man say to another, "Happy birthday, man, you're getting old." The man replied, "That's the idea, isn't it? Sure beats the alternative." Getting old is desirable because the alternative is less desirable. I want to admit from the outset that I have the least experience in this season of life, and I may not have any experience at all, depending on how you define middle-aged. I'm still in my late 30s, but I do find that all signs seem to be indicating that I might be becoming middle-aged. You know, no one calls me young man anymore. They used to for a long time, but nobody does anymore. I've also been wearing the same style tennis shoes for the last 6 years, which I think is a sign of maybe becoming middle-aged. And I like getting socks for my birthday. Once again, another sign that maybe you're getting to be middle-aged. I wanted to make this admission from the beginning because, once again, I have little to no experience in the phase of life that I'm about to talk about, which I wouldn't normally talk about something that I don't have much experience in. So as I speak, I won't be offended in the least if I say some things and maybe you don't think I'm exactly right, because many of you know better than I do, and I appreciate that. I want to start by talking about some of the challenges, the struggles, and the special temptations that seem to be faced by people as they get older, middle-aged and older. As with every season of life, there's some happy things and there's some hard things about becoming middle-aged in particular. As you reach that middle phase of life, the enthusiasm of youth is fading away and the seriousness of life is becoming unavoidable. And this is something that does change. And I've already seen this in myself a little bit. It's not that I'm not a happy person. I just realize now how serious things are, much more serious than I realized they used to be. I enjoy raising our children, and yet at the same time, as they get older, the stakes are getting higher, aren't they? The older they get, the more serious I have to be about doing my job as a parent. As you get to the middle age of life, you become very busy. You're busy at work, busy at church, busy at home. In this phase of life, you might also be raising teenage children, escorting them through their own struggles in life. And this may lead to new conflict with your husband or wife. This can become quite discouraging, even depressing. A friend of mine said to me a few years ago, "Man, the midlife crisis is real." You know, sometimes people talk about the midlife crisis. Well, why do they talk about it? Because it's a thing. It's a real thing. You get to the middle of life and you experience some very serious struggles. But you get through it. Life carries on. These struggles subside, and then you face a new set of challenges. Your kids grow up, they move out, and then you've got an empty nest. You know why they talk about empty nest syndrome? Because that's a thing too. I've had many people talk to me about the special challenge that you face when your children grow up and they move out. People talk about empty nest syndrome because that's a real thing. You might start to feel a struggle to feel purpose in life. You might realize at this phase in life that you hardly know your husband or wife because you've been so focused on childbearing. I was talking to a man not too long ago who was joking around. Their last child had just moved out of the house, And again, he was joking, but he said, I guess I'll have to talk to my wife now. Just realizing that as you go through the child rearing years, you become so focused on child rearing that maybe you can lose track of your husband or wife. And then you get through that phase of life, just as you've regrouped emotionally and financially, you establish some new routines in life, and then your check engine light comes on. Except not like the check engine light on your car, the check engine light on your body. It seems like it must stay on pretty much the rest of your life. So let's talk about some very specific challenges that people face as they get older. I was told that maybe you had a sermon a little bit like this not too long ago, so I hope it's not too much of a repeat. Here's one challenge that I have noticed. Older people tend to have very well-established habits and deeply ingrained opinions. Is that good or bad? Kind of depends, doesn't it? It can be good, or it could be bad. As you get older, you have habits and opinions that have developed over a lifetime, and they can become so embedded in a person's routine that maybe you don't even realize that you have those habits. You don't even realize that you have those opinions. And once again, that could be good, or it could be bad. It's good if we're talking about Bible study and prayer, but it's not good if we're talking about sin. Lifelong biases can start to feel like absolute, unnegotiable truth. Remember that stubbornness can sometimes get disguised as conviction. Many older people can become bitterly averse to change. And I feel this a little bit. We were talking about technology earlier. I understand why people can become so averse to change. I really hate when I have to get a new phone or a new computer or learn a new program or learn a new app. I understand. I don't like it either. I'm sort of in between, you know what I mean? It wasn't until high school and college that I really got involved in technology, but I didn't grow up with it as a kid. Lots of kids today, they've grown up with technology, so it's no big deal to them. A new computer, a new phone, a new tablet, new apps, new programs, that is no big deal to them. But even for someone like me, 37 years old, that is a big deal. And I hate when somebody changes the technology, because then I got to relearn all of it all over again. So I understand being averse to change. I've heard many older people say, though, you're not going to change my mind about that. Now, is that a good attitude or a bad attitude? Once again, it depends, doesn't it? That's a good attitude if you're right. But what if you're not right? What if I'm not right? Then I need to have the humility and the self-awareness to change. We have sayings about stubborn old mules, and the Bible does too. Psalm 32, verse 9. Do not be like the horse or like the mule, which have no understanding, but must be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they will not come near you. So once again, remember this point, especially as we get older. Conviction is a virtue, but stubbornness is not necessarily a virtue. Maybe this goes without saying, but something I meant to say earlier. Throughout this lesson, I may use the phrase old man, or old woman, or old people. I want you to know I do not mean that in a derogatory way. I mean that with the utmost respect. I do not use that in a derogatory way. Many old people, older people, here's another struggle. They may struggle with regret. And here's why I think that happens. It's because only when your hair starts to gray, or maybe you lose it, whatever your case may be, whenever your hair starts to gray, that you have the wisdom to recognize the magnitude of your past failures. As you get older, you realize the seriousness of things that went on in your past. And maybe it hurts to look backwards in life, wishing you'd known then what you know now. Once again, I'm not that old yet, but even now, as I get older, I realize this, and I feel this too. There's things I said and things I did back in my teens and 20s I wish I could go back and redo. I hurt people, and some of you have probably had those experiences too. I hurt people, and there's people in life carrying baggage because of me, And I wish I could go back and redo those things. And unfortunately, I realize it only gets worse as I get older. As I get older, I know there'll be more of this. There'll be more regret. There'll be more things I can look back on in life and realize I made mistakes. And so I know, and I think you all know, that regret is one of the difficulties of getting older. Here's a specific regret that comes up a lot. I don't know how many times I've heard older people say to me, I wish I would have spent more time, anybody know how that sentence ends? With my kids. That's how it goes a lot. I mean, that sentence can end in different ways, but that's one I hear quite a lot. I wish I would have spent more time with my kids. And I'm glad people say that to me. Why do you think they say that to me? Because I'm in the middle of parenting right now, and they think that I ought to know the mistakes that they had made so that I don't repeat those mistakes. Something interesting about that statement, it's interesting to me that sometimes I hear this from people who it seems spent quite a lot of time with their kids, but maybe what was the problem? Maybe it wasn't the right kind of time. Maybe they spent night after night, weekend after weekend, year after year, running their kids around to ball games and competitions and endless extracurricular activities. They had a lot of fun. But then looking back at it, they realized that in all of that busyness, they never spent much quality time with their kids. They didn't spend enough time just sitting around talking about life, talking about their feelings and what they're thinking. And so I'm very glad that people have said this to me, that I wish I would have spent more time with my kids. I'm glad to know they have that regret. I'm sorry they have that regret, but I'm glad to know it so I can learn from that. And that's why sometimes these regrets can be used for good. We'll talk more about that later. Another challenge of getting older, I've heard, is just getting older. And what I'm talking about there is the physical problems that come with aging. Many of you knew my grandpa Morris, Milford Morris, and when he was going through the long, prolonged process of dying from kidney failure, I was over visiting him one day and he called me over and said to me quietly, "Once a man, twice a child." Anybody ever heard that phrase before? Once a man, twice a child. After several decades of being a big, strong man, his body had deteriorated to a point where he had to be cared for like a child all over again. And when he said that to me, he didn't say it with any bitterness. It was just the truth. And he thought, as my grandfather, he ought to share that with me, that that was something that he was going through in life. No matter how big and strong you are, eventually you might get cared for like a child again. Physical problems as a person gets older can become so serious that people will even move so they can be closer to their doctors. You ever heard of that happening before? I didn't even know that was a thing until I started paying attention. People have to do this sometimes. Your health can get to a point in life where even the most basic decisions, like where you live, becomes governed by your physical health. People with chronic illness live this way their entire lives, and almost everyone will eventually live this way, where even the most basic decisions become governed by a person's physical health. These endless physical problems can be their own challenge, but they inevitably give rise to another. This is another challenge that every older person eventually deals with, and that is the reality of mortality, learning that we will not, cannot live forever in these physical bodies. Getting older is good, but it comes with a lot of disappointment and heartbreak. About 10 years ago, I was talking to Francis Stanley. Any of you know Francis Stanley? That'd be Wade Stanley's grandmother. I was talking to Francis Stanley, and she said to me, "I've had such a beautiful life. I wish it didn't have to end." She was realizing what we're talking about right now. I don't remember the exact timing, but she said this to me either just before or just after her husband Oscar died. And she wasn't angry or afraid, but she was disappointed. This was obviously a disappointing thing to her, that realized this beautiful life eventually comes to an end. And she was handling it in the right way. But it seems like it's possible to maybe handle it in the wrong way. There are people who can't stand the idea of aging because they cannot stand the idea of dying. There are people who prefer to ignore the reality of their own mortality. And so this is a question that we need to deal with. Does the idea of dying scare you? And if it does, why? Is there something unresolved in you that needs to be taken care of? Because according to the Bible, should aging and dying be something that we fear? Should it be something that we're scared of? Should we be spending our entire life to avoid it? Absolutely not. You're supposed to get older. The body is supposed to fail. And in fact, the Bible teaches we're supposed to die. Romans chapter 8, verses 20 and 21. Paul explains why this whole world is aging and dying. He says, "For the creation itself was subjected to futility." That's the process of dying. "Not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself will also be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." This world, our bodies, and everything associated with it is designed to fail. It's designed to die. Why did God do that? Because he did it in hope, as a reminder that there's something better than this. The Bible also teaches on this subject that recognizing our mortality is good. Eventually, everybody has to learn that we don't live forever. I learned this when I was 24 years old, when my friend Clint Sparks died in a car accident. I would rather not have learned that lesson, to be totally honest. And yet, at the same time, it was a good lesson to learn. I had to realize that your friends don't live forever. Your buddies don't live forever, and I'm not going to live forever. I had to learn that rather young in life. It's been good to know that, but I wish it would have waited. Even so, God teaches us that eventually we must learn this. We must learn our frailty. Psalm 39, verses 4 and 5, David said, "Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age as nothing before you. Certainly, every man at his best state is but a vapor." That's a strong statement. That's a strong plea, isn't it? David is saying, "God, help me to know how fragile I am. God, help me to know how short this life is." Because when we know that, then we can do our best work for God. At the same time, though, I'm listing this as a challenge. This is one of the difficulties of getting older, realizing that life eventually comes to an end. Still talking about the challenges of getting older, I heard one older person say, I wouldn't have thought about this on my own, but I heard one older person say that the worst part of getting old is nobody knows who you are anymore. That's a very interesting idea. Once again, I don't know that I would have thought of that on my own. But that's what they said. The worst part of getting old is that nobody knows who you are anymore. I was reminded of this idea not too long ago. I was talking to my dad. His name's Mark Moore. Some of you know him. And I was asking him about his mom, my grandmother, Jean Morris, who's the wife of my grandpa Milford Morris, who I was just telling you about, who passed away from kidney failure. I was asking him if one of my grandpa's siblings was still alive. And his answer was no, that sibling is not still alive. And he said, in fact, your grandma Morris is the only one of that entire generation that's still alive. Of course, her parents are long gone. All of her siblings are gone. All of her cousins are gone. Her own husband is gone. She is the only one alive in her family of that generation. And I can understand how that could become a very lonely place in life. And that's what this person was talking about. It wasn't my grandmother who said this, but that's what this other person was talking about, who said one of the worst part of getting old is nobody knows who you are anymore. You have no family anymore. Your siblings are gone. Everybody who knew who you used to be, they're all gone. Why is this a challenge? This can become a challenge because people in the process of aging are afraid of that because they're afraid of being forgotten. And I understand the fear of being forgotten, and yet I don't know if that's a righteous fear. I want to push back on that idea just a little. I've seen people at the end of their life panicking for fear that people will forget them, putting their name on everything. Is that the spirit of a Christian? It's not. It really isn't, is it? I don't think it is. I wouldn't want to be forgotten. So let me say once again that I can sympathize with that fear. And yet, it is not my name that matters. The only name that should live in perpetuity in my family and in the church is the name of Jesus Christ. If my name gets forgotten, that is just fine. If my name gets forgotten, that's just fine. As long as my children and my community have remembered the name of Christ. When we die, when you die, you will leave behind a legacy. But what a great disappointment and failure it would be if the only legacy we left behind was our family name and a family farm and family heirlooms and a record of our personal accomplishments. That would be a catastrophic failure. The legacy that matters, the only legacy that matters, is the legacy of faith. If you pass that on to your children and to your church and to your community and to your peers, then you have done what you were born to do. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 14 and 15. Solomon observed this. This is Ecclesiastes 9, verses 14 and 15. This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with a few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. And yet no one remembered that same more poor man. He did something great. He saved a lot of people. But did anybody remember his name? Nobody did. This is a bittersweet reality. Let me ask you a question. 100 years from now, is anybody going to remember us? Probably not. Think about it this way. Do you remember the people that were a part of this community, a part of this congregation 100 years ago? I don't even know if this congregation has existed for 100 years. But how many people do you think about from 100 years ago? It would be hard for us to even put together a very long list. So this is the reality we all have to accept. 100 years from now, nobody's going to remember us. They're not going to be talking about us. They're not going to be honoring us. They're not going to know our names. But here's what we can do. What we can do is leave behind a legacy of faith. Pass on the name of Jesus Christ to our kids, to our grandchildren, to our church, to our community. And if we have done that, we will have done what we're supposed to do. Those are challenges, though, coming to grips with that reality. Now I want to talk about some positive things. Of all of these lessons, I had three. I told you I'm only giving you two of them. But of each phase of life, I have the most opportunities listed for these older periods of life. There is a golden season in life when you have money, you have some time, and you still have reasonable health. Maybe not perfect health, but good enough you can do something with this extra time and extra money. My parents are in that phase of life right now. They are retired from their secular work. They're still reasonably healthy. They're financially in an okay place. And that's what I'm talking about. Many of you may be in that same phase of life where your children are raised. You've got reasonable health. You've got a little money. You've got a little time. So what do you think the lesson is? Use it for God. Right now, because very soon there will come a season when you still have a little money, you still have a little time, but your physical health will fail. After years of battling cancer, Tom Woody said, "I had no idea how good I used to feel." Isn't that an amazing perspective? I had no idea how good I used to feel. Good health is not guaranteed, and unfortunately, we don't usually appreciate it until it's gone. This is what Solomon was talking about in Ecclesiastes 12:1. Solomon said, "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth." And we can make that a pretty big idea, not just when you're young, really young, not just when you're a teenager in your 20s, but when you still feel good. That's what Solomon was talking about there. When you still have reasonable health, remember God then. Before the difficult days come and the years draw nigh, when you say, "I have no pleasure in them." So you may be, even as you get older, you may be in a special phase of life where your health is still good enough. You can still do a lot of very, very valuable things. Here's another great advantage of getting older. As you get older, you are the most qualified to speak about the faithfulness of God. You are the most qualified to speak about the enduring mercy and grace of God. I want you to know this, if you're older, if you feel like this lesson is for you, there might be young people who could maybe quote more Bible than you. Maybe you feel like there's younger people that can explain biblical concepts better than you, but let me assure you of this. There is nobody that understands the outcome of a Christian life better than you in your old age. You know things that younger people just don't know. You know these things. David said in Psalm 37, verse 25, this is what David said when he was an old man. Psalm 37, verse 25, he said, "I have been young, and now I am old. Yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread." You know, I can read that statement and I believe it's true, but I don't know that it's true. Not in the same way that David knew that it was true. And if you're an older person, I don't understand it the same way that you do. You can know that what David said is true because you've experienced. You've experienced it. See, I don't yet have the ability to reflect on life from the perspective of an old man. Someday, God willing, I will, but right now I can't. I cannot speak about life from the perspective of an old man. And again, I mean this in the most respectful way. Some of you can. Some of you can speak about life from the perspective of an old man or an old woman. And what I'm saying is that is a gift to have that experience. Over 1,800 years ago in the second century, there was a disciple named Polycarp. Anybody ever heard that name before? Polycarp? Polycarp was an elder in Smyrna, and when he was being examined prior to his execution, and he was executed, he was martyred for being a Christian. Prior to his execution, the proconsul who was examining said to Polycarp, "Take the oath, and I let you go, just revile Christ." Polycarp replied, "For 86 years I have been his servant, and he has done me no wrong. How can I blaspheme my king who saved me?" This leads me to my next point, one of the great opportunities of getting old. I've already hinted at this, and that is you have wisdom that only comes by experience. Solomon said, "The glory of young men is their strength, and the splendor of old men is their gray head." What's he talking about? He's talking about wisdom. He's talking about the experience that comes with getting older. As you get older, you have experienced things that the rest of us have not. You've done things that the rest of us have not. Many of you have buried your mom and dad. That has got to be a life-changing experience. Some of you have buried some of your own children. Once again, that must be a life-changing experience. Some of you have buried your spouse. Some of you have seen your adult children make really good decisions. But maybe you've also seen your adult children make bad decisions. You've watched other people succeed and fail over the course of a lifetime. You've had your own lifetime of successes and failures. You, as an older person, have seen how one decision can cause a cascade of consequences that will continue for decades and decades. You see, as you get older, you learn these things. You know these things. And that is why I love when old people give me advice, especially when they give me advice about their successes and failures that they have experienced in life. They're trying to help me out. They're telling me things that they know that I couldn't possibly know yet. There was a time a couple years ago when I thought that I wanted to be a cattle farmer. By the way, I have since learned I am not the material to be a cattle farmer. Even so, at the time I wanted to be a cattle farmer, I was consulting an older friend of mine. He was in his late 70s. His name was Charlie Bice, a member of the church down in Somersville. He since died. But I was talking to Charlie about this, and I'm pretty sure Charlie knew that this was not going to work out. Even so, Charlie gave me advice about being a cattle farmer. And he said to me one time, he said, "Tad, never buy a cow from the sale barn, because if it was that great of a cow, it wouldn't be at the sale barn." Anyway, I always laughed at that piece of advice. That was his life experience. By the way, I've since heard that there's lots of people who buy cows at the sale barn, and they do just fine. But he did not. He tried it, and he failed, and he wanted to share that experience with me. So what I'm telling you right now is, if you're an older person, embrace the experiences that you have had in life. You've had successes, you've had failures, and so please share your wisdom with the rest of us. Maybe you hesitate to do that, but I'm asking you, please don't hold back. I would even go so far as to say that this is a God-given responsibility. Do you remember what Paul told Titus? Paul told Titus to admonish the older women to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, and teachers of good things. This is what older women were supposed to know, that they were supposed to be teachers. And I ask you to do that, please. Because if you won't teach us what you know, you are in fact condemning us younger people to suffer through the same mistakes that you made. And I would rather not. I would rather learn from your experiences. You know, sometimes I think older people choose not to share their wisdom and experience because they don't think us younger people are listening. I think sometimes older people don't share their wisdom experience because they don't think we're listening. And you might be right. You might be right, but tell us anyway. That's my advice. Tell us anyway. Even if you don't think that we're listening, even if you don't think we're going to believe you, please tell us anyway. Because someday we'll remember what you said, and we will benefit from the wisdom that you have shared with us. As you think about getting older, you can kind of compare it to the teenage years. If the teenage years are a long and difficult transition from childhood into adulthood, then you could say these winter years of life are a long and difficult transition from mortality into glory. That's the way we're supposed to look at getting old. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, Paul said, "Therefore we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is for but a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal." This is a valuable perspective that you can have as you get older. As your physical life begins to fail, physical things just become less interesting to you. As the body fades away, you start thinking more and more about the parts of you that will live forever. This is an opportunity and a gift. And that's why David said in Psalm 90, verses 10 through 12, "The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath." And so David said, "So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." Even though our mortality is a challenge, it is also a tremendous gift that comes with wisdom. In conclusion, let me tell you a story. A few years ago, I was sitting in a deer stand. I like to deer hunt. I was sitting in a deer stand. There was no deer around, and I was just sitting there contemplating the beauty of the woods. And an interesting thought occurred to me. It was fall down in the Ozarks. Many of you have been down through the Ozarks. And the woods were changing to their autumn colors. Sumac is the first to change. If you've ever seen it, you'd know what I'm talking about. Sumac turns a fluorescent red that almost seems unnatural. The oaks in the woods, they all change to different colors of red and orange. My personal favorite is the hickories. And I think that was the tree I was looking at when this thought occurred to me. My favorite is the hickories. Because just for a few days, under the right circumstances, a hickory tree will glow with vivid yellow leaves. When you're driving around in the fall and you see a glowing yellow tree, it's probably a hickory tree or maybe a walnut tree. But then what happens to all those beautiful glowing leaves? They turn brown, they fall to the ground, and they return to the soil. The next year, the same tree will do the same thing. It will bud with new leaves. They will serve their purpose for a while. They will glow with beautiful colors in the fall. And then the same thing will happen. They will turn brown, they'll fall to the ground, and return to the soil. And it's funny, the thoughts that strike you when you're in the middle of the woods, got nothing going on. I thought how this is an amazing parable for the Christian life. I'm just one leaf on the tree. I get to live for a few short seasons. There's been thousands before me, and there will be thousands after me. 1 Peter 1, verses 24 and 25, Peter said, "All flesh is as grass, and the glory of man as the flower of the grass." Or you might say, as just a leaf on a tree, "The grass withers, the flower fades away, but the word of the Lord endures forever. And this is the word by which the gospel was preached to you." This is our life right now and our one opportunity to be beautiful and give glory to the Lord. Eventually, we will fall to the ground and turn back to the soil just like the thousands before us and just like the thousands that will come after us. Right now is our opportunity to give glory to God. Whatever season of life you're in, that is your mission and purpose. So thank you for your time and attention today. We'll offer an invitation to anybody who needs to obey the gospel as we stand and sing.